This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
I tried to tell you guys. You need to listen. It's Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Get on the phones. It's you and me, baby. Let's roll. We've got so much to discuss regarding the Knicks, regarding the farce that has been this postseason, regarding the future of the organization and who's a part of it and who's not. And if, in fact, there is any sniff whatsoever at trying to find a way to stay in this series. We get to all of that soon, but we're going to start with the Yankees tonight before the game gets underway to give you your chance to get through at 800-919-3776. Guys, it's been clear really since last year, and we didn't want to necessarily admit it to be the case because of what last year was. A 60-game season that I think it was very difficult to judge anybody off of. When I look at the Yankees from last year to this year, nothing has changed, and they are an exceptionally flawed baseball team. And that has been the case for quite some time. You need to look at this objectively and understand that. And I think finally, some people are starting to understand that. You know, when you look at how it's put together and what you're relying upon in different places and how you are evaluating the talent and what's left, you understand that you are in a bad situation. A bad situation. Friends, we knew Gary Sanchez was washed last year, okay? We had seen enough over the course of a couple of years to understand what his situation is. He's not an everyday catcher in the big leagues. He's not capable of being consistent enough offensively to justify it. Luke Voit has been hurt. That's not something that you can easily predict, but, you know, if you really look at it, Luke Voit has had more than his share of injuries now. The one area that you could look at and say, I never saw that coming, is DJ LeMahieu with the way his numbers have absolutely tanked this year. That has been a huge part of why they are where they are. But I look at the fact that they have to bat Gio Urshela cleanup, that there are some numbers out there that tell them that that's the best way to go. I look at the fact that Aaron Boone has to continually give Giancarlo Stanton time off just from a maintenance standpoint. And at best, he's a 120-game player. That's what it feels like right now. I look at the fact that Aaron Hicks was a bad contract from the get-go, let alone what it looks like right now. Again, injuries that we saw happening quite a bit in his career. And yet, you gave him a big contract off of his best year, a guy that you got for virtually nothing from the Minnesota Twins. And that contract has killed you, has really hurt. You look at Aaron Judge and you understand what he is when he stays healthy. He's not the biggest part of the problem right now, but you know what's coming. At some point, you understand what's coming. He's going to be hurt at some point. It's inevitable, given his history. You look at the streakiness factor. We saw a lot of that last year, didn't we? I mean, go back and think about the bizarre 60-game regular season that it was. You had a stretch for the Yankees where they would lose 4 out of 5, 6 out of 8, you know, something along those lines, and then they'd win 7 in a row. That the whole situation last year was one big streak, and that really went into the postseason. They could never find themselves a consistent stretch of winning 15 out of 20, something like that. Okay, it was a shortened season. You want to take that for what it's worth then. That's fine. I get that. But look back now, and maybe we were seeing the precursor to what was to come. It seems very clear that that was the case. They're sitting here at four games over 500 in an incredibly important week against the two teams in front of them in the division. And there's very little confidence that they're going to have a good week. Very little confidence that they're going to have a good week. Why should there be confidence right now? I mean, the Rays are seemingly unbeatable. You talk about consistency, they've been nothing but. The Red Sox have been very, very good this year. They've been consistent. They're 11 games over 500. You don't look at the Red Sox and think they're world beaters, yet all of a sudden, off of one bad year, they bring back their manager, and they've done a pretty good job of staying consistent this season. It's been impressive. They don't get into prolonged losing stretches. They might lose 4 out of 5, but they're not going to lose 9 of 10. That's not what they do. So this week, you have the Yankees facing these two teams, and let's call it what it is. They're at a crossroads. They're very much at a crossroads. This is going to be Hal Steinbrenner having to make the call about adding to this team, and you're going to be looking at a general manager that made all of these deals, and he's asking you for more. Just look at it from that standpoint for a second. Take away the general fan anger regarding Hal and not going above the payroll tax. Think about it for a second as if you were Hal Steinbrenner and you're looking at the payrolls of the two teams sitting in front of you. And I'm shelling out $220 million or whatever it is right now, and this is what I'm getting in return. And my general manager, who has been here for 20 years plus, 20 plus years, wants to add more, wants to let the Band-Aid be my checkbook. Hang on a second. How exactly does that work? How do you sell me on that? You'd have an easier time selling him on the notion that we're going to have to blow this thing up and I don't know how we're going to do it. Now, we're not there yet. Don't get me wrong. But the only way to try to fix this is throwing more money at it. Can't get creative. Can't go find the next Gio Urshela. Can't go find the next what you thought would be great in Aaron Hicks. The guys that you wanted to throw off of the, or that you wanted to pick off of the pile, and they're in the bargain bin, whatever. And you turn them into gems. You shine them up and turn them into stars. Oh, that's not what we're doing here, guys. You're not finding the next Luke Voit. Brett Gardner in center field? Oof. Mike Ford's playing tonight? Oof. Gleyber still can't play shortstop? Oof. Even though we continue to see progress, as Aaron Boone says, there are just so many things here that are flawed with this team that are not changing anytime soon. And we need to come to that realization. They are what they are, and that's not a great team. That's a team with major holes in it. And they may go and have a stretch where they win 8 of 9, 10 of 12. But rest assured, as much as they're going to have that, they're going to have the stretch where they lose 10 of 12 as well. How do I know? Because we've already seen it a couple of times and we're only 2 months into the year. Guys, again, I'm going to go back to a theme before the year. And if you don't buy it, I can't help you. If you don't understand it, I can't help you. The general manager is the problem. He has put this team together. He has spent this money poorly. Poorly. You're stuck with Stanton because of him. You're in a position where Aaron Hicks is getting $10 million a year and he signed through 2025 because of him. You're in a position where Brett Gardner is now playing center field because of him. You're in a position of not knowing if Aaron Judge is somebody that you should keep long term because you already have a remarkably similar offensive player because of him. You're in the position of living in denial regarding the catcher because of him. When's enough enough? I mean, if this is not going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, what does? Okay, the numbers say they're going to go win 90 games, 100 games every year. We have moved the bar from championships down to postseason and roll the dice. Let it be a crapshoot. Since when are we moving the goalposts? Let us get rolling with Tyler in West Hempstead up first today on 98.7 ESPN. Tyler, how are you, brother?
Good. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great. What do you got?
Good. So I think Cashman has been very, very lucky throughout his career with the Yankees. I think he's been buoyed by the dynasty of 98 to 2000, and I think he got very, very lucky with signing CC Sabathia in 2009. But I think
That was a no-brainer. He's had two complete no-brainer signings, Sabathia and Gerrit Cole.
Right, but I think he's never really had that good of an eye for pitching. Like, you think back to the Bovano signing,
I agree with this.
I could literally go down the list. Like, he's never had a good eye for pitching.
You and I are in lockstep there, Cowboy. There has been a lot of money wasted on pitching over the years.
Yeah, I mean, like, and like, I'll just hang up and listen. But thank you for your take.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't even talk about Corey Kluber in the beginning. Guys, when you are relying upon a guy who has pitched 30 innings in the last 2 years to come in and be healthy and be your number two, that's not fair to him. That's not fair to your team. And look, Corey had been great the last several starts. Great. But when you can't stay healthy, it doesn't matter. And he hasn't been able to stay healthy the last few years. Now, you can sit there and talk to me about Luis Severino. That's fine. When he comes back, another guy that has been out for basically a year and a half to 2 years. When he comes back, we'll talk about it. When he's effective and is the guy for a long time, we'll talk about it. Right now, doesn't mean a darn thing to me. Henry, Sunnyside, next, 98.7 ESPN. Henry, what's up, brother?
Hey, Carlin, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, I'm really tired of people complaining about the Yankees like you. And every old guy gets on complaining about how the Yankees were so much better 30 years or 50, 80 years ago. Can you explain to me how are the Rays so much better? Position by position, who would you trade from the Rays to the Yankees? Second base? No. First base? Possibly. Shortstop, they got nobody. Third base, Wendell over Gio. The outfield, is there anyone?
You're going,
you trade
here's
right
the
now?
Problem.
Would
you're
you,
going position
you
by
position.
Hang on. You're going position by position and trying to break it that way. What the Rays are good at is building a team, and as far as analytically, they blow the Yankees out of the water. I mean, I'm not asking the Yankees to be as good as the Rays are at this. I'm asking for them for their money to actually pay off in production.
That's just luck, man.
What the Rays are doing is just luck?
It's just what
the Rays are doing is just luck.
It's straight up luck.
No, it's not. No, it's not. No, Henry. Henry, you want to call last year luck? I get it. Call last year luck. What they're doing this year, what they've done the last couple of years, just as far as being competitive at their level of finance, that's not luck. That's smart.
I just don't, but I don't understand it. They're not a great team. They don't have great players.
But they win.
So how are the Yankees going to compete with a team like this when they got no one on this team?
But they're winning.
It's just a complaint.
They're winning and you're not.
I get it. I get it. Yeah, but you know what? We were how much worse than the Rays last year? That's the complaint.
But
that
your
I'm
payroll was like, four times what the Rays payroll was.
You're right.
Four times.
I'm sorry. I don't get it. I just don't get it. And
I don't know what there is to not get. It's a team that has won 90 games every year since 2018. Well, I mean, 90 games in 2018 and 19. They went 40-20 and went to the World Series last year. And they're 15 games over 500 after 55 games this year. Thanks for the call. There's not much to discuss. They are better at it than you are. And they know when to get out on guys. They are better at it than you are. You want to go and talk about all of the individual positions and who would you trade and who would you do that? They get overall better results than you do. That's what it is. They're better at making more out of less, if you want to put it in those terms. Ryan in Astoria is next on 98.7 ESPN. Ryan, how are you, bud?
How you doing, Chris?
I'm great.
Listen, I've been an Aaron Boone supporter, you know, since he's gotten here. But this lineup today, I mean, how could you defend it? Listen, this is not a routine series against, like, the Colorado Rockies, who they'll have no impact. If they lose, they are in danger of being 8.5 games out of first place by June 5th. And then they have the Red Sox, who everybody said, by the way, that they weren't going to be good. You know, it's early. But they've shown they've been holding their own. And you know what? That's another team to watch out for. But you have Mike Ford batting fifth.
I mean, if you want the bigger indictment on Aaron Boone, here it is. Alex Cora came back, and the Red Sox have been brilliant. I mean, if you really want to look at it legitimately, that's how you could. Alex Cora is getting a lot out of that team. He's obviously had a very, very positive influence, and they are playing for him.
And listen, as a Yankee fan, I know it's early, and you can tell me if my pinstripes are showing right now. But listen, I'm approaching panic mode here because we are in June, and we have half the team batting under 200.
You should be
half
in panic
the team
mode.
Batting under 200.
You should be concerned now. And there's nothing wrong with being concerned. Thanks for the call. You should be absolutely worried. Why wouldn't you be? Because you right now don't see a path to being consistent this season. Why? Because they have not shown you that they have a path to be consistent. And that's been the case for the last 2 years. It is, we will go out there and win enough games. We will eventually hit. We will eventually do this. And the cream will rise to the top. And then we'll get to the postseason. And then we'll just kind of let it, you know, however it goes, it goes. That's the bigger thing, too. There is no longer any sort of urgency that is put on winning. That's just all there is to it. No urgency. Where is, and I don't want to, I'm not going to bring up the name, but there used to be people that were held accountable many times to a fault for not winning. Now it's gone so far the other way. So far the other way. Chris in Westchester next, 98.7 ESPN. Christopher, what's up?
Hey, Chris. You know, I think you're spot on with everything you're saying about Cashman. And Boone is kind of a puppet of Cashman. She's doing whatever he wants to do. You know, you look around baseball, and who's the greatest management person out there? Theo Epstein. He's there. He's there for the taking. You know, you offer him something, you let him build it over 2 or 3 years like he's done everywhere else he's gone, and that's your fix. And I'm not a Yankee fan, and I can see this. I'll let you talk. What are your thoughts?
I get it. You shouldn't have to do that. But it's hard to argue against it. It's hard to argue against it. I mean, the guy has gone the other two places and has won championships in both of them. It's hard to argue.
And I think you're 100% correct. He also, in addition, Cashman has, there's no player on that roster that's homegrown other than Judge that's done anything since Derek Jeter. Like, they haven't produced anybody. And that's on the GM.
Oh, what?
You know, you gotta count put Brett Gardner? Stats together. You got to put it together.
You don't count Brett Gardner?
You know, he's spent.
Listen, I'm joking, but Brett you're Gardner. Right. You're, they he's have not. They have not really had a farm system, and thanks to the call, that has developed very much at all. They have always been brilliant at hyping up their prospects and then trading them away. They have always been brilliant at that. But look at the prospects the last couple of years that they've had, and they've overplayed their hands. With Frazier, with Andujar, with all of them. They have overplayed their hands, actually held on to them, and it hasn't worked. Very, 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 very difficult to try to sell me that somehow the Knicks are still alive in this series. I'm going to delve into so many different aspects of this throughout the night, okay? We're going to get into this series now. We're going to get into what this series has told us about this team, how this series has affected how you feel about the entire year, and how this series has affected how you feel about particular parts and the future of this organization. And this right away should tell you how I feel about this series. They're not winning it. They're not coming back and winning it. If they win tomorrow night, it will be a nice moment at the Garden. It will be a nice little goodbye for the offseason. But they're not winning a game six in Atlanta. Let's be clear on that. And I don't even feel great about their chances tomorrow night. But when I look at the series, I can't be anything but remarkably disappointed with how they have played. And why it bothers me so much is just because they had given you so many reasons to believe that they would match up a lot better than this with the Atlanta Hawks. And maybe we all just got suckered a little bit. Now, there are obvious things to point to. You could point to how poorly Julius Randle has played, and he has played remarkably poorly. You could have Julius Randle have an off game or two in the series. You could not have him be bad in virtually every game. Basically, he has been MIA from seven out of eight halves in this series. He had one good half like the Knicks did. Second half, game two. That's been it. You have RJ Barrett, who has been so disappointing, but I would be willing to cut RJ Barrett some slack because he is a 20-year-old second-year player playing in his first postseason. Okay, you have to expect that there are going to be growing pains from it. But then beyond that, I don't feel good about anything. I don't feel good about the head coach. Tom Thibodeau's had a terrible series. He has been completely outcoached by Nate McMillan. Nate McMillan has had answers for what to do with Julius Randle. He has thrown a lot of different coverages and looks at him, and it has thrown him completely off his game. He's been brilliant with how he's handled that. He's handled his rotations fantastically. Granted, he's not necessarily in the position that Tom Thibodeau is where he can't go to three of his guards because he knows he's going to get nothing from Elfrid Payton, from Kevin Knox, from Frank Ntilikina. I mean, think about that. Three guards that you know you cannot put in the game. That's not easy. But having even said that, has Thibodeau done anything to make it terribly difficult on Trey Young in this series? Has there been a lockdown stretch on Trey Young? Really, those have only come when he's been out of the game. There hasn't been anything in this mastermind of defense in these playoffs that have given you a whole lot of confidence out of what happened during the regular season. I mean, you were feeling great out of what happened during the regular season. Right now it's crunch time, and the Knicks defense has been completely outplayed, not just by a team with more talent, but the Hawks defense has been so much better. The Hawks are not a great defensive team at all. They didn't care that much about it. They were middle of the pack defensively during the year. Middle of the pack. And yet somehow they have dominated defensively in this series. Dominated. Who has shot the ball well? Well, that brings us to the bigger question. Was what we saw during the regular year just fool's gold? Because it kind of feels like that right now. Kind of feels like we were hoodwinked to a degree. Or maybe we were just seeing more than we wanted to see. There were a lot of different ways that you could feel great about what transpired this year and about how the progress was really being made. Okay. Nobody expected to win 41 games. Nobody expected Julius Randle to be the most improved player, and at least in the MVP discussion. Nobody expected that RJ Barrett would take such a big second step forward. There are good things to feel about. There are things to feel good about, right? Okay. What's transpired in the postseason has kind of taken away from that a little bit for me. I'll get more into that in a little while. But the bigger issue for me, as far as this series is concerned, there is not anything that I see that gives me any confidence going into tomorrow night. Please explain to me how you can look at a game five, even in your own building, and feel great, or even feel reasonably confident, or even have hope. I mean, why would you? There's been no indication whatsoever of any life from the Knicks in the postseason. Look, talent-wise, we knew what they were. And that was not terribly great. We knew that they did not have superstars all over the place. But we also thought they were better than this. Maybe we were just duped. 800-919-3776. Roger in New Jersey. Next, 98.7 ESPN. Rogier, que pasa?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Your recent comments that you just said are very, very well put. And the one thing that I think is happening with Julius Randle is the fact that I don't think anybody ever thought that he was like the number one star, maybe stretching it to the number two, but he's a solid number three. And he's trying, he's putting in all the effort, but could any of his other players ever make a shot? Like he's going into the paint, kicking it out, and nobody seems to hit a shot, whereas it seems like Atlanta never misses.
The only guy that hits shots or makes things happen or can create his own shot is really Derrick Rose. And we were talking about this before the series started, that Rose, because of the veteran aspect, had to be that second scorer, but he is really turned into the first scorer, and you've got no shot when that's the case.
Absolutely. I totally agree. But I think that it's way too much was expected of Randle. He had a great year. I don't think I missed one game during the year. And Thibodeau got every ounce out of all these players, knowing full well that they weren't where they needed to be. But he did a great job getting that out of them. That being said, you know, this is just showing how far away that they are and how deep Atlanta is when you have a man-to-man comparison with Atlanta and New York. You can see the disparity.
Right, but what were you relying upon going into this series, Roger, and thanks for the call? We were relying upon, while knowing that the Hawks were more talented, that the Knicks, functioning as a better team as they did all year, they were going to be able to continue to do that. So that hasn't happened. They have not played great team basketball. They haven't, you know, gone out and tried to play hero ball either, but they're not coming up with any sort of real chemistry that we saw during the year on both ends of the floor. Now, look, they were never a great offensive team. They actually got better later in the year, but they were never a team that was going to beat you by scoring 125 a night. The Knicks were 20-2 this year. 20-2 when they scored more than 113 points. They scored 113 or more. They haven't sniffed that in this series. Now, granted, in the postseason, the numbers are always going to go down, but 113 is not an outlandish number. It's not. I mean, the closest that they have come to that is 105. Otherwise, not close. But you brought up an interesting point in the midst of all of that. It's something we're going to delve into next. Was there something fundamentally flawed in how the regular season was approached by the Knicks that really may have ended up costing them? I'll tell you why there was. That in moments. We'll also hear from Clint Capella, who's running his mouth for some reason when you're up 3-1. You know, there's no need to motivate, but I don't know that it'll matter at this point for the Knicks. But more importantly, why how the regular season played out for the Knicks and how they handled it has really worked against them in the postseason. With Tom Thibodeau and the way the Knicks played through the course of the year, I think we can all agree that they had the pedal to the metal, right? They played exceptionally hard throughout the course of the season and really only had a couple, three, four stinkers throughout the year, too. They played with an intensity in the regular season that we are now seeing a lot of teams did not play with. I'm not saying that they were so far and above everybody else with how hard they were playing, but teams like the Hawks have been able to take it to the next level. And you wonder with Thibodeau, by keeping the foot on the gas, all gas, no brakes, as Robert Saleh would say, did you put yourself in a position where when you wanted to get into that next gear, there simply wasn't one? You might say, well, we should have been used to playing at this level all year. You were playing at your level of normal, where other teams upped it even further. And when you thought that you could take it to the next level, it turned out really wasn't there for you. And so you're learning right now that you're not going to be able to navigate your way through an entire regular season like this again. And is Thibodeau capable of adjusting like that? I'm not saying that you don't play hard, but, you know, when you are who you were this year, he was going to do everything he could to win every single game he could all year long because the Knicks were so lacking on the talent front. So you had to play at that level to get here. Ultimately, though, talent wins out, as we're seeing with the Nets right now. For me, that's kind of sickening because it really continues to prove that the regular season means nothing. But, I mean, we are right now. Embiid looks like he's not going to play tomorrow night. We don't know what his situation is for the next series, although apparently the Sixers are somewhat optimistic about the situation. If Embiid is not 100%, you know, the Nets are not going to have any problem in the conference finals with the Sixers. They're just not. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Let's hit John in Jersey next. 98.7 ESPN. Johnny, what's up, buddy?
Yeah, what's going on? First time caller.
Good to have you with us, man.
I really liked your point about the Knicks. I just wanted to maybe take a little bit of a different approach. You know, a lot of the Knicks players are more young players, like Julius Randle, who's not that young, like doesn't have that much playoff experience, and Derrick Rose, who has a lot of playoff experience, is playing really well, but the rest of the players are like choking. I think it's like just...
Well, Julius Randle's first trip to the postseason. And that's fine, but he's 26. He should be playing better than he is when he had the season that he did.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's such a talented player that, like, all of a sudden in the postseason, he's not hitting shots, and Bullock is not hitting any shots, and R.J. Barrett's missing a lot of, like, basic shots. Like, it looks like they're just choking. It's just... In the moment, it's just too much.
I don't know that it's choking, John, as much as I would say, and thanks for the call, that it's just a case of not being all that good. Maybe they just aren't that good. It's funny coming from me because it wasn't a month ago when I was saying, maybe they're actually better than we think. Well, I guess not. No. That does not appear to be the case. They look like they are, in fact, worse than we thought they are. How about Sam in San Antonio? Sammy, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, my brother? How you doing, man? I hope all is well. I hope you had a good Memorial Day weekend. I heard the weather was great up there this weekend.
Yeah, the weather sucked. You know what I did?
Here's what I did.
I feel like I spent my weekend with Peter Rosenberg because I watched three different A&E biographies on WWE wrestlers, on Macho Man Randy Savage, on The Ultimate Warrior.
Okay, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, I watched the one on
the Warrior one.
Savage, the Warrior one's pretty good. And then the Shawn Michaels one. And Peter is all over them. And he's especially in the one about Savage. The Savage one I was kind of most fascinated by. I did not realize the relationship dynamics there with Miss Elizabeth myself. But anyway.
Yeah, I saw, you know what? And I'm not a diehard wrestling fan like Al Rosenberg is. I'm just like one of those nostalgia, you know, I grew up with it. So all these characters, I am interested into the biographies. I was calling for two reasons today. Number one, I wanted to actually sing songs of praise of you because I've been listening to sports talk for a long time. And I don't know if you did it before, but I can't remember any other time that a single host ran two solo shows in the same day. So hats off to you for that, my friend. And also for you to keep your sanity from some of the calls. The Rays are lucky? I don't know about all that, my friend. I mean, the Rays are a good organization. And you know what, man? You kept your cool. I was listening to that, and I don't really, like, flip the lid. But at some point in that conversation, I would have had Don LaGreca rant. Like, come on,
dude. At times, I will. But put it this way, when you hear pitchers talk about hitters getting themselves out, that guy got himself out.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? You entertained it longer than I thought you would have. So thank you for letting that go as well. The other reason why I wanted to call is, you know, we've talked about this plenty of times at this point. DeGrom, he's just unreal. I rarely get to hear Greenberg in the morning because he's just on too early in the morning for my workday. But I happen to get to hear his piece on that, and he now says he's the best pitcher he's ever seen. And I think you and I agree that he's definitely an elite player. My question to you at this point is that it's now starting to come out. I don't know if you read that Josh Donaldson thing about he's going to, this is relatively new, that he's going to out some of the, he has a list of video, a catalog of videos of pitchers using whatever that substance is that's giving them extra spin. Now, I know that's out there. Hitters are doing their thing. My question to you and your very educated opinion is, DeGrom is an elite pitcher. That that substance gives you, what, an extra mile or two per hour? So, yeah, he wouldn't be averaging the 100, 101. That's, I can believe he has that substance. But let's take 2 miles off of it. It's all relative, right? Take two, 3 miles off of everybody else in the league. That still puts him at the higher end. And the additional beauty of him is that, to me, he's Greg Maddux and Pedro Martinez put in one, where Martinez had that $98, $99 an hour gas, but with DeGrom has that Greg Maddux accuracy. He could put
The accuracy is staggering. I mean, here's when you know, Sam, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. When you watch a game that Keith Hernandez is broadcasting, when you hear Keith make those noises like, oh, like from a hitter's standpoint, that's what he's doing. He is marveling at what DeGrom is doing from a hitter's standpoint and talking about pitches that are just flat out unhittable. And he's also talking about that pinpoint accuracy that DeGrom has. Now, what he's talking about with Josh Donaldson is this. So the sticky stuff that you've heard so much about, that's really coming to the forefront, and hitters are really, really getting aggravated, which I find funny because, of course, these hitters were not around to benefit from steroids, but you understand that obviously there was a time in which they did, and they did in a big, big way, both in terms of numbers that were put up and financially. So the sticky stuff in question is pretty simple. It is rosin and sunscreen. Now, I retweeted the other day, and I will go find it again and retweet it once again, John Boy's explanation of this. It was outstanding. Now, John Boy does some amazing stuff. I'm so impressed with what he does. But he did an incredible job of pointing out how spin rates have been so drastically affected by this and how this sticky stuff, as they call it, is pretty simple to make with rosin and sunscreen. And you'll see guys like Lance Lynn take the rosin bag and put it up and down his arm. And he's basically just combining it all right there so he gets a better grip on the ball, more rotations on the ball, and it can break. It can go a little bit faster. It can do a lot of different movement on it. All of it is impressive. And how much this can really affect it. So Josh Donaldson says, in relation to Dallas Braden, a comment that Dallas Braden made last week on Twitter was this. Joe West has backed his umpires in the league into a corner. He's going to make somebody enforce it or be damned, or he's going to expose the lack of desire from MLB to want to enforce this, which isn't a secret. From there, blank either changes or we're going to see guys using Velcro. Baseball has pretty much indicated they're only doing studies on it this year, but they're not going to do anything about it. Nobody's really going to get punished this season. Donaldson reacted by saying, crazy idea here, but I'm going to throw it out there. Stop cheating. Braden, we all know the difference between pine tar, rosin, sunscreen, and the other stuff that's being used today. The common denominator of all those things is how, if, when, to whom they enforce it. It's horribly inconsistent at best. No precedent is the precedent. What's next? And Donaldson said, I agree. I have an entire catalog of video of these guys cheating. It's coming out. So Donaldson has been studying it and says he's going to release the entire catalog of pitchers cheating. That's come up in the last few days. We'll see. I just, you know, when you know that they're not going to do anything about it this year. It's almost like the Mitchell report when they did all of the drug tests, but they didn't do anything in terms of, they basically told the players, we're not going to punish anybody this year. We're just doing these tests when they first started looking at it to find out how many players were doing steroids. That's pretty much what they seem to be doing this year when it comes to the sticky stuff. I know that was a lot to absorb, but I will find the John Boy video clip again and retweet it because it was explained so beautifully by him that you need to see it. When you consider that Tom Thibodeau had to be someone who had his foot on the gas all season long with a team that was not terribly talented, you understand why he did it, and give him credit for getting this team to 41 wins and a top four seed in the Eastern Conference. Nobody thought that was possible. That was an incredible accomplishment on his part. But you do have to wonder if he's going to be able to take the foot off the gas just a little bit in the future. Because even though the Knicks played with that intensity and got to where they are, turns out the number four seed didn't mean very much. And the Hawks have been able to do what they have done relatively easily because they have had another level to take it to. I almost feel like in this series, the Knicks have not had another level to take it to. Like, it's been floored all season long. So when it came time to change gears and take it one step further, they really didn't have one to go to. So imagine for a moment that you're a superstar that's considering the Knicks. The Garden's the place to be. It's cool again. A big reason why it's cool again is that Tom Thibodeau has put them in a position to be successful, has had a year where they have been successful, has won a lot of games. He deserves a ton of that credit. But if he's going to play that style all the time during the year, how exactly is that going to rub off on you as a superstar player? And I'm not talking about just playing hard. I'm talking about not leaving enough in the tank for when it matters the most. Because while I wouldn't say that they have been, let's say, run out of the gym because they've been out of gas, no, they've been out-coached. They've been outplayed because of their talent level. But if I know that this guy is going to have his foot on the gas all year and we're not going to have that next gear to shift into, maybe, just maybe he's not the guy. You know, superstar players are in a position now in the league where they're going to want to pick their own coach. That's all there is to it. And we've seen this in Brooklyn. We've seen it other places. It's going to continue to be a trend. And while Thibodeau will be here for the foreseeable future, he is going to have to adjust his style once they get a superstar or two here. He's going to have to be able to dial it back a little bit so that you have not run your stars into the ground, thus costing you when the playoffs roll around. Brian in Manhattan is next, 98.7 ESPN. Brian, how are you, buddy?
Chris, I'm good. You know, listening to you, and I enjoy, it's a good listen, but I find you contradict yourself, you know, during the hour. So a moment ago, you said that KD and Kyrie probably wish they'd have come to the Knicks, but then you're saying, well, Thibodeau isn't the guy that these guys would want to play with. Well, I can tell you this as a Knicks fan. I'm glad I have the team that I have. Yeah. I couldn't root for KD and Kyrie, who need to pick their coach because they don't want to be coached. And the fact that you're getting on Tibbs right now, they're down 3-1, Chris. Stop with the funeral stuff, okay? the fact that you're talking about Tibbs almost in the past tense is lame. He's done a
I'm not talking
job.
About him in the past now, tense. What I'm saying is would you agree that in getting everything out of this team that he did this year, which was a remarkable accomplishment, that they were playing harder all season long than everybody else. And now when you've gotten to the postseason, you've had a team like the Hawks that's been able to take it to another level where the Knicks really haven't been able to.
But it's because they don't have the – look, I got the Hawks lineup in front of me, their roster. They have nine guys that any GM would love to have, right?
Yeah, they're more talented, absolutely.
They're more talented. They're younger. They're better shooters. I mean, the only game the Knicks won, I don't know if you remember, but the Hawks sort of like, they blew up. They just were turning the ball over. The Knicks just had that run where they made the Hawks crazy. And that was the hope, that the Hawks would play inexperienced basketball. But, you know, Trae Young is making people forget that the Hawks inexplicably chose him over Luka Doncic. That's how well he's playing. He's fantastic. And Bogdanovich, I mean, think about if Milwaukee had Bogdanovich. Think about this, Chris. I'll leave you with this. Imagine that CP3 was distributing the ball for the Knicks. Even though they lack a lot of talent, if you had a point guard that could get R.J. Barrett the ball. R.J. Barrett has disappeared. He's a young guy. If you had a point guard like CP3 instead of whatever they're doing now, it would be a very different result. So I asked you to...
It would be, and thanks for the call, Brian, it would be, but CP3 wasn't the way to go right now because of where he is in his career. I don't think he was going to want to be here, first of all. Look at where he is in Phoenix. They're going to beat the Lakers in this series. They're going to. And he's going to be a big reason why. Of course, Anthony Davis being hurt is also going to be a big reason why. Of course, if the Knicks had a point guard, they'd be much better. Trae Young has been amazing. In fact, you could really look at this and say that the Hawks, talent-wise, are what the Knicks should aspire to. A point guard like Trae Young, and then other guys who can make shots and make plays and defend. Like, that's what you would want. The Hawks got a couple of 3-and-D guys. They got guys who can get the job done in that way. And as far as your initial point about contradicting myself, I could see where you would think that, and maybe I didn't do a good enough job of explaining what I meant. What I meant was, in terms of the coolness factor, if you were KD or Kyrie, and Thibodeau has done what he has done to turn the Garden back into the place to be, knowing what you know now, benefit of hindsight being 2020, you would pick the Knicks. But that doesn't mean that Thibodeau would be the coach long-term. If he's going to drive you into the ground, he's not going to be the coach long-term because that's not how it works. What I'm saying is it's an aspect of him that is going to have to adapt when they actually do get their superstar here via trade or however. It's going to have to adapt. It's not, you know, telling guys not to play as hard. What it is managing your guys so that they have plenty in the tank and can turn it up to another level when you need them to. Spike in St. Pete. Spike, what's going on, brother?
Well, it's a very interesting conversation. I agree on some points. I don't agree on others. To me, it's really, really simple. The Hawks are beating the Knicks because they're controlling the tempo of the game and because Trae Young controls the paint. The Knicks could roll out Sherman Williams and Benjamin Moore as starting point guards, and Trae Williams would have more paint time than them. It's just he's controlling the game. It's just so simple to me. This guy's going wherever he wanted. The first two games you recited, my memory is good, which I doubt. 9 out of 15, 7 out of 11, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he was getting into the paint without much of a problem at all. That has continued to be the case. It hasn't been to the level it was in game one, but he is an outstanding player, and the Knicks don't have him. But the let's be clear, though, Spike. The Hawks are beating the Knicks because the Hawks have more talent.
They have, absolutely. They have nine guys, I believe, that average double figures during the season. They have a lot more talent. I do agree with you about, you know, the intensity, and every play during the middle of the season is life or death for Thibodeau. But he has a lot of young kids to work with. The mistake was made starting Derrick Rose because you knew it would catch up to him. He could play 40 minutes a night. They're not beating this team. If you don't control the paint and you got 3-and-D guys and wing shooters, you're dead in the NBA. You're dead. Steph Curry does it. He does it. The kid John Morant does it. And the other little guy does it too. These little guys, I mean, little, but at least my standards, but in the NBA, they're considered small guards, you know, and Nate Archibald and Isaiah Thomas were two from the past that controlled the paint. It sets everything up because the guys on the elbows, Chris, you've called enough basketball games. You've seen it over and over again. The guys on the wings have, they can go wherever they want. They just spread the floor. Eventually, they're going to make open looks. You know, Julius Randle missed a lot of easy shots. A lot. Now, he just didn't, the defense is not all totally responsible.
No, not completely responsible at all. No, absolutely not, Spike. And thanks for the call. It's been Julius Randle playing poorly. They have thrown a lot of different defenses at him. But when you've had the season that he's had, he should adapt better than he has. He hasn't. And that's been the biggest issue of all. But why is it that he can't be better? Why is it that he has not, through the first few games, gotten better at least in this? It's because Derrick Rose has to be your number two. And as a result of Randall playing so poorly, he's been their number one scorer. That can't be the case. Think about that. Derrick Rose is 32 and is at his best when he's playing 25 to 28 minutes a game, not 35 to 39. And I know all of you guys were screaming and yelling about Elfrid Payton. He's terrible. He is absolutely terrible. But he was a warm body that was at least giving him 7 or 8 minutes. And trust me, I am not advocating for him to play. But the biggest area where you see the difference is that Rose now has to play 39 minutes. And it's going to take its toll on a guy like that whose body has taken a lot of abuse over the years.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.